And welcome, everybody, to Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. This is Emmanuel. There's Kyle over there.
Hi, everybody.
Out in YouTube land, or not actually Signal land, eventually getting to YouTube land, is Rob, Gila, Alex, and Jason. You all there?
I am.
Yep. We're here.
Wow, sounds
here
like everyone's there. Good. And are we
here? The van is here.
We're actually ready on YouTube this time.
Ready and willing.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Then we simply have to connect with our listeners. But before we do, any other lingering commentary people want to share?
Well, once again, you brought me on, and I was a complete wall of text. And I always try to make sure that everyone else gets a word in edgewise, but it usually works out to a word edgewise. you asked a really big question there because – like watching the archive blockage story like explode like it did, like 30 or 40 outlets have covered it and we're getting all of this interest. It wasn't supposed to be that way, and it's just huge, and it's caused a lot of people to like litigate like what is the purpose of an internet archive. And like I said, the only thing I take issue with is they're like, this could be the end of the Internet Archive. And it's like, no, we're fine. But it's like an issue. It's a weird issue. And anyway, that was big enough for people. And then, of course, this AI thing is going to be endless forever.
Go ahead, Kyle.
I've recognized that in the conversation for sure, just with a lot of the projects I do. I think a lot of listeners probably feel the same way, especially when things, certainties in the world aren't what they were. And, you know, I think what we've been trying to talk about is our own institutional memory. And then, and we've talked about this in past conversations, but also what is our purpose? You know, what kind of just reevaluating some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even without external prompting, as you're talking about, speculation and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, my job since the mid-90s, right, is like recognizing things that are in danger of being gone. I just ended up going to the biggest clearinghouse of trying to save things before they're gone, but I had been doing it for decades before, and it's hard for people to get into that mode. And so, like, in 2021... somebody put up a ROM site, and the ROM site was called Murient, and it's out of Russia, and people, I guess, were using it, and then they announced a month ago that they were closing. And oh my God, talk about, I'm 55, right? Like, watching these kids lose their minds over losing that beloved 4-year-old institution, and watching them grapple with the existentialism of online life and how things are going. It was like they lost their first goldfish. They were like losing their minds. So I went on their Discord and said, okay, kids, give me a channel. And a lot of them are like, who are you? And I'm like, go read the Wikipedia page. Okay, give me a channel. And I just kind of tried to inspire, because there were like 7,000 people on this channel.
Oh my
with
God.
Nothing to do. Like, nothing to do. And I'm just like, ask me questions about preservation and why we do this and what's it about. And so some good lessons came out of it, because the actual thing was dumb. But the emotions were real, which is people go to a website or visit a family member or go to a favorite bar, and they don't give any thought to, like, what's keeping this whole? And can I be part of what keeps it whole? Like, that's a tough lesson, and sometimes people learn it a little bit late. And if it took a ROM site in Russia for these kids to learn it, so be it. You know, I think that lesson. And so the archive is that lesson writ large all the time. Oh, my God, I loved this blog. The guy died. His family didn't keep it up. You know,
uh-huh.
There's actually you remember Ripco of Ripco BBS?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I remember that. In Chicago, right?
Yeah. So Ripco, like, got divorced and was living alone and had a Ripco.com kind of ISP he was running very poorly. And so when he died, it went on autopilot and then closed, with no warning. Like, it was like running without him, and then it collapsed.
Right.
And all these people who were using that service essentially for free disappeared. Like, they suddenly found their stuff was gone. I got warning that this might happen, and I found some sites that he had uploaded, and I called it Ripco. It's on the archive. It's called Ripco's Last Stand. And it's a bunch of, like, weird little hacker video and, like, a young Ripco being, like, a funny guy and just, like, capturing a little bit of his spirit before it was gone. Like, for those people, Ripco.com was their email, and it just disappeared. Like, it just disappeared. It was like, yeah, because your ISP is a weird guy in Chicago. That's you get exactly what you deserve, buddy.
Yeah, Jason, Kyle and I were talking about this earlier today, just basically about ways of communicating and saving the communication so that you can refer back to it. And we find this, especially when it comes to, you know, helping to organize a conference, you want to be able to communicate with people and then refer back to the conversation maybe a year or two later because, you know, why reinvent the wheel every time? It's good to, like, know how you solve certain problems that come up again. And we find that there's this pushback against using email these days. People don't want to communicate on email. They want to communicate, dare I say it, through Facebook or private chats through various social media outlets. Is there something that you find that is most effective for saving history, for saving conversations, something that won't disappear if a company goes out of business, something that you don't have to sign up for another service in order to even be able to communicate? Is there something that you found works?
There's something that I know exists, which is an option. Here's the problem, right? This is, and we know this because this is the bread and butter with Hope and stuff, right? Which is convenience tends to trump function, longevity, and cost. And so people will just, like, everybody is using Discord, but, like I see, you can see it. You can see all the ramifications, right, of using Discord. And you're like, hey, you know, that's just like some crazy VC-funded company that is just opening up servers and is going to inevitably do a cost-cutting measure and half your stuff's going to go away. Like, you know that's coming, right? Like, your business inside of a nightclub, right? Like, you do know that, right? Like, the DJ is going to be like, bye-bye, and that's going to be the end of it. To do actual structural setup takes work and it takes maintenance. So, for example, Mattermost in its open source functionality is like a very good persistent chat system that you could run locally on a server and maintain what's coming out of it, and with a little bit of discipline and control. Like, what you don't want to do is fall into that trap of, let's have our discussions on this server, and man, isn't it great that the end user people believe in us and want us to do things, so let's invite 7,000 people onto our private entertainment system here and work on what it's doing, because then you're going to get hacking and weirdness and spamming, and now you're spending more time moderating than getting work done. But like, there are these open source alikes that could do the job, and you could have a local LLM that you control that's locked down, that looks at reams of transcribed text or transcribed whatevers and produces summaries and functions as a search engine instead of going to a centralized website, God knows, run by God knows what. You could do it. It's just work. It's just work. Mm-hmm. And having somebody who has the skills to, like, work with the group, you know, sure, video cameras are cheap, recording devices are cheap. But the people who will run those during a conference or a presentation, they're priceless. Like, the people who will do that work and keep it up and then make it available to you and not put it in there. Yes, sir.
Rob.
And in the case of Discord specifically, like, I know Discord. I use it. I have a couple of very tight circles of friends who that's their main congregating thing. So I'm on there. But at the same time, you think of open source alternatives to things. Discord, the bones of it, is IRC. They put a shiny shell over IRC, and that is the new hotness somehow. But nobody there is going to consider jumping over to just plain IRC that's been running for 40-some-odd years, because it's just not cute. And you can't, like, pull up GIFs on it. But it is there. And it those of us who were, you know, old enough to be there when the ancient magics were written want to send emails and want to use these, you know, ways of communicating that were built to be decentralized, that were built to just be usable and there. And the entire sense of the internet, like, I don't know if the vibe actually fits that being much of a thing anymore, at least the social internet.
Yeah, it's frustrating because, you know, in the end, what a lot of people want to do is simply communicate ideas back and forth, not necessarily videos or GIFs or all kinds of other things, which are distractions. You know, I read my mail through Mutt, okay, on a Linux system, and it works just great. And what bothers me is when people insist that I differentiate the blue from the yellow and what they've written. I don't see it that way. I just see the text that, you know, is coming through the email, and it serves me fine. And I resent being told that I don't get it because I'm not doing it their way, when it works just perfectly well.
Right.
So I don't know. I find that happens a lot in various places in technology.
Well, there's a big difference between this discipline and elitism, and I think that, like, sometimes people conflate them. So if you have the discipline of running a community and you're like, look, we're going to do this, and we're trying to make it persist, and we're trying to make its information useful and productive, and we want to cover topics that are meaningful and not just brain rot each other into oblivion, you know, that takes some discipline. But some people might be like, oh, you're so elitist, I can't even post stupid junk here. And it's like, are you suffering for places to post stupid junk? Like, is that your problem? Are you starved to do that? And I do think that, like, technology has changed people. And I think we're seeing that already. We're seeing that with AI, where people are not necessarily giving up on analysis and things, but it's very alluring to speak in full sentences to a machine you think understands you. Like, that turns out we like that as people. And with social media, it's very exciting for there to be a little number with a little star after you write something in the world and see a rating. Like, oh my God, you got 5 likes. I got 13 likes. My thing is probably much more funny. I bet you I can tune the way I talk to you so I get more likes every time I respond to you. And it leads to a very certain kind of populist writing in your communication. You know, when I write blog entries, I do it in a very specific way. And when I do my podcasts, I do it in a specific way. Not for everybody, but for the people who care about it, they care about it a lot. But as a result, well, actually, that's not entirely true, but I was going to say, like, as a result, it's not that successful. But it is a successful podcast for what it is. It's fine. It helps pay rent. But it's not, like, I'm not also chasing, like, I'm not going to mention the one person who does a podcast who has said the worst things about the archive based on scant threads of information. I don't want to get his audience's ire. But, boy, can that guy find, like, an eighth of a jawbone and an iron nail and tell you how the entire society lived from it? Like, oh, my God. He just gets the most, like, he phrases it in ways that make his audience be like, yeah, I'm learning. And it's like, no, you're not. So getting back to, like, functionality, your problem is always going to be that conferences require a lot of youthful energy. Somebody's got to move a lot of chairs. Somebody's got to watch a lot of doors. And so you get people who are younger. You can't just get a bunch of us 50-year-olds together and expect us not to be on the floor screaming for Advil within a day or two of making things happen. And as a result, you try to figure out, how do I find people to communicate with us who can help get things done and have this responsibility and so on? And if they've never run it before, I mean, the closest I can think of is, A, be inclusive where you can, but also, like, I spend a lot, like, that's one of my big jobs, by the way, is, like, scaring up volunteers. And it's, you know, you try to afford respect to volunteers, but you can also tell that there's a certain phase of people who are just in it to cause a mess because that's what excites them. And they're never going to be productive, and they're never going to be a part of it, and they're going to drag things down. And somebody has to be the hard ass to say, look, it's not working with the two of us. It's not working. You've got, you're good at what you do, but you kill the oxygen and you really don't get back to us when we need you. And that's the tough gritty that people don't really understand about organization and work. And mm-hmm. Hello, Gita. I looked up.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. Just wanted to jump in really quickly, say hello to the 40-some people who are with us right now.
Hey. We're good with that. That's a small number, but, you know, we don't live for huge numbers like a lot of these podcasts do. I'd be very uncomfortable in that kind of setting. I don't know how you talk to 7,000 people in a channel. I don't know how you do that. How do you hear anybody?
Discord had a setting, which I requested, called slow mode, where no one person could ask a question more than once every 30 minutes. And they learned very quickly to form their questions over that time.
How are you not still reading it now, though? 7,000 people, slow mode, just seems like it would take forever.
You know, like Jackie Chan when he ends up in the bar and like 400 henchmen are attacking him?
One by one, yes.
That's what it looked like for about 4 days. People were like, oh my God, oh my God, he's just still answering. And I'm like, yeah, ba 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 ba. So watch, kids, I can do 60 words per minute and I've got nothing but words to say.
Do they line up as neatly as they do in Jackie Chan films where, you know, they don't hit you two at once? They basically, okay, I'll wait for my turn and then I'll try hitting you. Does that
go get my ass kicked?
Yeah.
It was pretty hairy for a while. What I would do is when a person asked a question, I would put a response emote on their thing with a check mark and then say reply, and I would reply. So when I was scrolling back going, did I miss anything, I looked for missed check marks.
Oh, wow.
Now they've tired out, so they only ask me a question about once every day or two.
It's still going on?
Sure.
Oh, my God. Okay. I didn't know that.
I mean, it's very funny. You know, they'll be like, what do you think, man, cheese or milk? Like, some of this stuff is, like, absolutely low grade, like, whatever. But other ones will be like, how do you deal with the emotional weight of knowing that you won't save everything? And I'm like, oh, well, this is what I've thought about that. But a lot of the questions are pretty easily answered. Like, what's your home setup? Or do you have a movie that really changed your look on things and stuff like that? So some of it's like weird little fanboy questions, and some of it is like, you know, interesting. Like, I'm truly grappling with this, and you sound like a guy who can have some insight, which is why I did it. Because when you're 21 or 22, the first time, like, obviously, like I said, goldfish for some people, a pet. They lose a pet or they lose a family member. But when you lose what feels like the immutable realm of an online site, it can be equally traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, 2600 goes down. That will be a hole in people's lives. And if you lose Google, that's one thing. But if you lose, like, you know, Jimmy's Fishing Shack, even if you haven't been on it in 8 years, it was a part of your life, and now it's gone. And
well, think of GeoCities, you know?
Yeah, GeoCities. You know, there's been a lot of, like, I mean, obviously, because I work for Archive Team and watch those things go by, we get messages from people going, this is going down. Can you do something about it? And I'll be like, really? That's important to you? Okay, I'll grab it. Mm-hmm. We'll get a copy.
No judgment.
People have very deep attachment to a bunch of things. Man, I have been living in this angel of death standing at the door between permanence and oblivion of the web for so long that I understand now it's more an emotional thing than a technical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've turned into a counselor more than a technician.
Wow. Gail, I'm totally sorry we interrupted you.
No, I was just checking in. My apologies. The chat has been very lively. People are talking about their old messaging systems. people responding to what Rob was saying about Discord and IRC. And Jason, very specifically, someone, Sarah, said, I wish more people I work with spoke this way. My gosh.
That's nice to hear.
Well, the fundamental question is, what way do you think, what's your definition of that way? You know, it's like, oh, I wish more people used multiple sentences and were not absolutely trying to show me brain rot 25. I found it. I will say, I actually get some very interesting information off of TikTok, but it has to be in like, very, you know, you find a person who is using it to create essentially 1 minute essays that are informative. So it can be done, but man.
That is something that we are definitely looking for to help with the conference, is somebody who gets TikTok. Because I don't think anybody in the main coordinating team is either a fan or has much experience with that particular platform. And I think we all know it's important. It does reach people. So, people look for ways of helping. That's definitely one way to help, is if somebody understands that and can make it work for getting the word out.
Yes, we currently do not have anyone that is really adept at that and are looking for a little bit of expertise and trying to make some of what we do and what we've tried elsewhere work in that medium.
Yeah. So,
and it's something that, you know, somebody that is interested in it and passionate about it, because a lot of people don't use that,
right,
and haven't needed to for many reasons.
But the thing is, you know, getting TikTok isn't enough. You also have to get hope. You have to get what this particular part of the hacker community is about. And if you're into that and you get TikTok, then that's definitely something that I think can work out well.
Because we've done short-form videos of past talks, for example, and mm-hmm. Highlights, sort of that kind of stuff. So, I mean, we played around with it. Yep. We've done pranks. We've done fun stuff, but
there's only so many hours in a day, though. There are so many different things.
The things there move very quickly. The fickle, right? Like the trendiness, kind of. It's a pretty brisk environment.
Gila, go ahead.
Yeah.
We got confirmation from Sarah, who says that what she was talking about was in response to being reasonable and skeptical about quote-unquote AI use. Did also want to point out that YouTube has been kind of harsh on content holds this evening.
What does that
found
mean?
Out that, well, YouTube does not love the phrase gay furry hackers.
Oh, they can fuck off. How about that? They would like that phrase?
Well, I don't disagree with you there, but
gay furry hacker, gay furry hacker, gay furry hacker. Yeah, come get me.
But
how did that manifest?
A lot of people were responding to it in the chat, and we got a comment that said the gay furry hacker chef really cooked with that one, and that got held for content review.
What does that even mean?
Very nice.
I don't understand what that phrase
is. That's a compliment.
Is that a compliment? I don't know.
Yes, that is absolutely a compliment. And then someone had a question for Jason, which got content held because of an unfortunate typo. Jason, the question is,
would you rather fight Jackie Chan style a horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses? Oh, man,
right.
those keys were so close to each other.
Since when does YouTube care if you cuss?
YouTube? Okay.
You remember how YouTube won't caption when we swear?
That's true, but I didn't know they would hold comments completely.
Oh, they hold stuff all the time. I mean,
why is moderator review. Why is Google such a bunch of prudes? I don't get that. I don't get that.
Isn't that some of our own preference, like, so we can at least look at it for a second? I mean, wouldn't we want to?
We're on slow mode, definitely.
I think that the fact that, as it's been announced, that I think it was in 2 years, the Oscars will stream on YouTube exclusively instead of being on ABC, really shows you that, like, they're really trying to position it as another network. As a result, they are more and more finding themselves kind of like, how do we set up channels? How do we set up whatever? Because, obviously, YouTube TV is a product that they want. And I think what you see here is what happens when you let a company like Google, which was never meant to go into this area. Like, this has always been the problem. Like, there was that golden era, and I'm so glad I got to visit Google during it, which was there was a period of time, for the young ones may not know this, between like 2000 and 2000, well, let's say 2001, and let's say like 2004, 5, it felt like Google was moving into unusual places, doing things as if from space, in a way that felt like it was going to advance humanity. So I'm talking about like Google catalogs, where they had like basically started scanning every catalog out there, and you could just do a global search of every catalog that had come out in the last month. Or Google doing books in a way where you could search for snippets and find, like, it all felt like, wow, they're really going in a new direction.
Well, I liked how, you know, their search page didn't have any advertising on it. And I realized, wow, finally, here's a company that's not obsessed with ads. And boy, right. That did not work out well, did it?
No, because what happens is, and I learned this from a friend who worked at Google. There was a thing where I would go, hey, why do you think this service went away? It would be something so simple, like whatever, I don't know, I'm going to make it up, Google Fridge, that like you could go to Google Fridge and type in something and see a fridge. Like, I'd be like, this service is so easy. Why did it disappear? Why was it decommissioned? It's so simple. And they said to me, the person who shepherded and wrote that site at Google to get promoted got promoted.
and they had no plan?
So there's no longevity idea, right? I pretty semi-famously, I haven't gotten rid of the site yet. I really have to do that. The day that Google announced Google Stadia, their streaming game product.
Oh, yeah.
I registered a website called Stadia Countdown, where I said, so Google usually kills their products within 4 years, so here's a countdown. How long before Stadia dies? Like, I knew nothing about Stadia. I'm just like, Stadia's going to die, so just visit Stadia Countdown. And they died 3.5 years in.
I changed
the website to say, hey, they shipped early. They're down. And that was it. And that's when I found out one of my best friends from high school was one of the guys behind Google Stadia doing work for them. And he's like, yeah, that site kind of always irked me a little bit. And I'm like, but it was true, wasn't it? And he's like, yeah.
Wow. Who remembers Google Wave? Remember that?
Oh, you see, Google Wave is so fascinating to me because I would like to understand more the theory that the brothers had. The two brothers who worked on Wave, the two Irish brothers.
Well, what is it?
Well,
I don't know what it is.
So
you missed it, Alex. It's over.
I know. I guess.
So, like, the first time you use Google Maps and you press a pinch and you're able to zoom in and you discover that the whole site is live and that you're able to move it around and everything else, and, like, that incredible power was the work of these two brothers who had been worked for Google. They had been working on this product, and it joined Google. And CIA project, by the way. It was like, wow, these guys are wunderkinds. They can do anything. So after they kind of pushed Google Maps into the world, and we got Google Earth and all that, they went off and they were going to create the next paradigm in information awareness. And I'm trying to think of, like, imagine in 1985 you're trying to create the iPhone interface, like all of the ways that's really insane, like all of the baked in knowledge that you need for people to have gotten to that point of like press on a thing and the keyboard is on the screen and all that. And it was going to be, it was this kind of integration of events and communications and access to information such that you were creating in real time communication streams with people. Now, if you look at how Apple approached this, or you look at how HP or the phone company approached this, you live test it to within an inch of its life. So, for example, they used, I think it was like 1 million people, was it, to figure out how long a touch tone should be pressed to register as a touch tone on a phone. They analyzed like 1 million people and had them experiment all over the country to go, human beings, when they press it this much, that's what they mean. Like, that's how exacting you were. Google Wave was not ready for the panoply of humans. And so they dropped this product, and they didn't just drop it, but they dropped it with a ice cream, Irish cream, whipped cream topping of, this is the new way we do things. This is the world. This is how it's done. And the best reductive criticism I ever heard of it was a simulator to make you feel like your grandparents feel when they use email. Like, it was baked with so many weird UI things that were brand new. Like, you remember the first time on a cell phone that you drag it down to mean refresh? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a thing that had to be introduced and then get response. But they did like 50 of these. So within like 6 months, Google Wave support disappears. Google gets cold feet. Google kills the whole product, leaving an entire world going, What was that? Like, there were people who had, like, written books on how to use Google Wave, who were giving lectures because they saw the potential. But it was like, so to me, it's an amazing study. Like, a product came out that in maybe 20 or 30 years will be like, oh, yeah, that's what Google Wave had. Oh, yeah, that's what Google Wave had. But we just weren't ready, and it wasn't refined enough. It wasn't worked with, you know, because Google wasn't really working with real people yet. They weren't good at that. Yeah, people are talking about Google Plus. Google Plus was the same idea.
Oh, wow.
Like, we're going to do a social network, but we are the most antisocial company on earth that's not directly involved in the military. Like, Palantir makes a social network. That's basically what Google Plus is.
We should conspire on all of the Google things that have stopped and put out a book. I think that would be – someone's probably already done it, but I think that would be great, especially –
There's something called the Google Cemetery where you can go and walk among the memorials of all Google products.
I went to the Ben and Jerry Cemetery up in Vermont. Have you ever been there? That's kind of creepy.
It's the Flavor Cemetery.
The Flavor Cemetery, yeah. Some of them came back to life, too, which is also weird. Rob, go ahead.
On that subject, there are actually a few different sites that catalog things that Google has killed off, and they all do have sort of a graveyard theme.
I think site.
Well, there's one called Killed by Google. It's killedbygoogle.com, and there's just a little a whole row of or a whole column of tombstones for each one, and the dates when it started and when it ended, and how old it was and what it was when it was killed, and. I don't remember most of these, I got to say, and it's kind of fascinating.
Got to pay attention, Rob. They go fast. Kyle, go ahead.
I just think, like, going back to like the example with organizing and stuff, it's really, really important to try to translate why like writing and composition and participation, especially with things that are a little bit older like email, that are useful for record keeping. Should be kind of, I don't know how to like teach it or make it cool per se, but what isn't working is when we try to get activity through those methods and we like there to be like self-direction and people doing what's comfortable. And we know that it, and this is what I was going to say in our conversation earlier at the outset, that it's a natural thing. People naturally will text, hey, did you get the email about something? Like, usually it's an additional layer of conversation that helps with organizing and uptake. And there's another point I want to make about churn, but to that end, like, it's okay, but we don't have a way easily, and this is also something that is designed into a lot of products, we don't have a way of interfacing with that or pulling logs of it because, well, like with Facebook and many other examples, like it's just not in their interests anymore to have that kind of interoperability. But then, and then, like, what's even funnier is that people will embrace the method, and then it's a feature that things are disappearing, which is something I think Slack started doing, which is great for, like, privacy because everything's so vulnerable. So it's like these paradoxes layered on paradoxes with, like, crappy business models, too. And then we're still staying there, like, okay, but, like, what activity there was like nil because everybody was doing something on something else, and like right. We just want to search and figure out like what X, Y, or Z was going on with this person that moved on because they had to go do their graduate program. You know, they had to go move on in life because, again, we understand people have lives outside of hope, and it's at-will volunteerism. Like, we get that, and that's an important part of it. But that ability to go back on our spool and look at what was said in text and have it be searchable is brilliantly, like, wildly valuable, even if at the time it isn't to the people involved. And emphasizing that is just super hard.
Hope is just one thing. This holds true for almost every aspect of my life I can think of. You know, it's great to be able to refer back to a conversation from years ago. Did you already talk to that person? You already asked them the same question? It's good to look. Look at your records. Can you do that on Facebook? No, you can't. I can't find anything on Facebook. I can't find my comments. If there's a way to do it, someone tell me how to do that. Same thing with, when people use Twitter private messages to communicate. I don't know why they did that, but they did. Or anything else that requires you to be a subscriber to a particular company, and you have to stay with that company. Look, you could use Gmail for your mail, and that's great, but you can you don't have to use Gmail for your email. You can use something else for your email. You can pick and choose. There are all kinds of different methods, and you don't have to subscribe to just one thing in order to use that service. So you have the record keeping, and you have the accessibility where you can communicate with people without having to be a member of a particular a customer for a particular company. And I just think it's a big mistake to make that a condition for communicating, and I think that explains why it's so hard for us to communicate with each other. You know, I've been invited to weddings on Facebook that I didn't find out about until 5 years later because I don't check every day and because it gets lost, and that happens on a lot of services. Rob,
talking of old school ways of communicating, I would love for us to open up our phone lines when we can to get people calling in and communicating with us.
Imagine if the phone number wasn't the same for everybody. Imagine if you had to get a different phone number because you're using a different phone company, and we had to give them all out, you know, it was not just one phone number. Yeah.
I'm hearing two different things out of you.
Oh, good. Okay. Tell me.
Two things, Mr. Goldstein. Number one, you are frustrated at the degradation of the intra-group communication methods that we have and mm-hmm. how quickly people are running to disparate commercial platforms with an absolute lack of understanding of the ramifications of that. Like, you have this anti-corporate, pro-communication, old-school printed magazine you run, mm-hmm. and everyone's like, cool, where's your Discord? So I get that. But the other one is, there's definitely, and I hear that from Kyle more, is like, there's also like the mechanisms and concepts of organizing, which you can, like, I was just dealing with another person talking about, he's been doing some study of like civil rights groups trying to talk about universal or guaranteed minimum income and a bunch of other social issues. And at one point he saw that like John Lewis had mentioned like when groups joined the Selma marches and others, he's like, we made sure they read the handbook. And he was like, what handbook? And he found it. He found me a link and we found it on a government. It's like, here is this like 2 or 3 page written sheet that just says, here are the basics of our organization. Mm-hmm. Here is what you are expected to do. Here is what you are welcome to do and what you are not welcome to do. So they knew literally everybody was on the same page before they moved any further. It would be like literally like, I want to help 2600. I want to be part of Hope. You go, cool. Here's a PDF. Mm-hmm. Like, go read the PDF, okay? And if you have an issue with anything in this PDF, we're not the group for you, and I'm sorry, as opposed to we find out 17 days down the line when you flip out because you and I didn't understand a basic premise. So this has always been a problem in large organizations, regardless of high or low turnover, regardless of underground versus corporate, is like if people are not ramped up and if you don't have interns who maybe just study and learn and then move on to the next project, having observed how things work, that's when you find that people are constantly making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And it's just a powerfully difficult thing to do. And I think the science of that fascinates me.
It just
there
feels
you go.
Like,
hello, people.
It just feels like we're missing by a mile now, because you can try talking to somebody and they will never be aware that you're trying to reach them because you're not on their platform. Whereas before, you could always send a postcard or something or show up at a meeting, and at least if you didn't connect, you were there and you could do that in person. But now, it's, you know, if you're not on every single platform that's out there, you risk not reaching the people that you want to reach, and it's extremely frustrating. And Kyle, you had something. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I just remember a conversation we had once, and Gila was talking about having a Bible or like a standard operating procedure, right? And that is something we've been trying to do, and we've had a lot of really just phenomenal support and worked on things that have carried over, and of course with the organizing we're doing happening more frequently, it's helped in a great deal. But places that we can point to on our own site or our wiki site, which need work. And I remember this, when I first started getting involved, a story about going through our forums and realizing, like, wow, there's a lot of like superfluousness here. Like just trying to like straighten it out to get ready for the next event. And people got mad that like some of the extra conversations were disappearing. And I was like, well, we're trying to improve it and get it ready for like rename it, you know, like get ready for a fresh start. But you have to be kind of careful. And you realize like when people are using something, you have to kind of guide a lot of that and have that kind of layout of, this is how we work. This is how we communicate. And then something that we've also talked about and are trying to translate a little bit better is finding out where people want to put their energy, because there's a lot of like enthusiasm, and that we want to like get people to the right places. So having that communication is all part of it. And if people are chatty enough, we can actually channel some of that enthusiasm and have it benefit others who participate or come to the show.
You know, I just realized we're so bad at this. We haven't even talked about the specifics of the conference. Hope Conference this year is taking place August 14th through 16th. We're back in Manhattan. We're in New York City at the New Yorker Hotel. Finally, a more New York name than that. It's two blocks away from where Hotel Penn used to be. So pretty much the impossible has happened. When we lost the hotel back around COVID, we didn't think we'd ever make it back to Manhattan because, we just couldn't pull it off financially. Now with the combination of the nonprofit and a lot of hard work and a lot of dedicated people, we're able to pull this off. But the only way it works is if people band together and make a successful conference and get the word out. That's part of the frustration we're feeling, is that the word isn't getting out as much as we want it to be. It's getting to the people that we know. We need to get to the people we don't know. And I think that's where everybody can kind of help out. For instance, this month, April, 10% of our ticket price is being donated to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The EFF will get 10% of every ticket sale from now until April 30th. I want that to be huge for them. I really do. But in order for that to happen, word has to get out to lots and lots of people who we don't know. Because so many people have not heard of Hope because it's hard to reach thousands and thousands and thousands of people when you don't know what it is they're reading or how to access their particular social networks. Everyone has a different method of doing this. So if we all help out and get the word out, then, you know, we're set, and we can do this every year. And I really think that this is a turning point. This is something that we can make a tradition in Manhattan, have amazing speakers. The conversation we had tonight is just a taste of the kinds of things that we present at Hope Conferences. So it's a new era, but we have to work hard to keep it going. And I'm optimistic. Might not sound optimistic, but I am.
One thing that comes to mind in the conversation is getting the word out about a particular activity. I was talking about the wiki earlier. We want to have that be accessible so that people that are self-organizing and planning on having meetups around the event that they can share that information with people in a particular place, because that tends to swell as people anticipate showing up and hanging out and stuff like that. And I just think that's an important place to coalesce. And what was the other thing I was going to say?
While you're thinking, I'll give out the URL, which is www.hope.net. And all the information so far is there. More information is being added all the time. And we're going to be adding all kinds of info on things to do in the area. We had, if you were at the conference last year or the year before that, we were at St. John's University before they kicked us out. And, and that alone right there, that's one hell of a story. I would like to see some magazine and newspaper do a story on that, of how, having an anarchist pamphlet got the whole conference kicked out of the university. But it resulted in us finding a better place in Manhattan, which was awesome. But if you've been to the conference in Queens, one of the biggest complaints was, what do we do at night? Where do we find food? There were places. Chinatown wasn't that far away, but it wasn't right next door. Well, now it is. Now it's 24 hours. It's right downstairs. It's all over the place. The city is, you can walk to Times Square. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be a great time. And I hope all of you listening can make it. So hope.net is all the info there. Anyone else have anything they'd like to add before I open up the phones? Kyle, you were finishing your thought.
Yeah. I was just thinking of the ideas that are going to come out about it. Just once we have them, like I was thinking about creative stuff, like art, a call for art and participation. And I was also going to issue kind of a design throwdown and some challenges and maybe do some other fun stuff around the event. But where do you talk about that you would get participation? And, of course, we have a lot of outlets for that. So I would just say, spread the word, and we're going to continue to get our announcements out and have things to talk about and let people participate in the kind of fun stuff and the ideas and themes that we're working on.
And you can join the announcement list at hope.net. There's a link to do that and get announcements whenever they come out. Anyone else have anything they'd like to say about Hope before we open up the phone lines? Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I just to contradict you, as I usually like to do, Emmanuel, I wouldn't suggest that anybody walk to Times Square, from the New Yorker Hotel. I mean, who wants to go to Times Square, right? But you do have Chelsea right there, which is kind of amazing, right? You got all the art galleries right around the corner from you. You've got the West Village right there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 23rd Street. You've got the Chelsea Hotel around the corner. You have basically like the best of Manhattan right around you at the New Yorker Hotel. It's super cool, and it's really easy to get to from New Jersey as well, right? Like you're right off of the Lincoln Tunnel. So
hang on. What about New Jersey Transit? The train goes right to Penn Station right there. And the PATH train.
Right,
you have two different kinds of trains that go across the street. That's incredible to me.
Yeah. No,
the buses, too. The buses up in Times Square, by the way. That's where the Port Authority is.
Yeah, I still
take an Amtrak.
Yes, again, Penn Station.
Amtrak from anywhere in the country, right there.
Yeah, it could not be more convenient. It really couldn't be.
No,
it's amazing.
This is one that I think is definitely not to be missed. I'm really excited about this one.
And get used to that sound, because that is the sound of Manhattan.
That's it, yep.
Yeah, of all the mistakes to make, going to Times Square is a pretty good one, though. Like, it's a great mistake. It's a great mistake to make once.
Well, look, there are Broadway shows. There's all kinds of cool places to eat and just wander around. People come to see this. We spent the last few years trying to get people not to do that because we wanted them to stay in Queens and be at the conference. But, people who are traveling from far away, they want to see those sites as well. Now you can. It's right down the block.
One of the things, so I did that talk last year where I talked about a guy and his passing, and I invited his daughter, who is not of means, so I flew her in, and I basically put her in a Times Square hotel because she had never been to New York City.
Oh, wow.
And I knew I would pick her up. And I would take her to Queens for the event, which she was there for the day, and she enjoyed it a lot. But I also knew, like, it was also a, like, this is for you, Dad. You never got to have me come to New York City or see it. And for her family, who were still back home, who were like, what's it like? And so she, like, sent me photos from Times Square going, like, I made it! I made it! But she also, you know, took her to Veselka so that she could have a great meal there. And, wow. You know, like, saw the city. But it was interesting because she did want to see Times Square just because she could bring it back home. But I made it very clear. There's a lot here. And I think she really, like, got a lot out of it. That was, like, a really nice part. And taking her to Queens gave her perspective because going from Queens to New York City, you pass through the tunnels and you pass through the – you're like, oh, this is all part of a incredible, weird place in all these different ways. So, anyway, it was good
– That was so sweet of you. That was so sweet of you to do that. And
I think it's important, like family members, when there's a if you can afford it and you have the means and you can do it, if you're going to build the central thesis of your talk around a life, you should have the family enjoy watching you do that. Like, she really liked sitting up and taking photos from her chair in the theater of, like, oh, they're discussing my dad, and it's in the context of, like, the great work he did, which is not something he got a lot of before the end of his life. So that was, like, a great thing and fun to do. So if he, I don't know, I try to leave things a little better than how I found them. I don't always succeed, but I try.
And, you succeed more than you know, believe me. Jason made reference to Veselka. Veselka is, for those who don't know, a Ukrainian restaurant downtown in Manhattan. And we just got word, actually, a couple of days ago, that they are reopening 24 hours a day on the weekend. So that means during the Hope Conference, you can go down and get Ukrainian food down in the village. And it doesn't matter what time of day, they'll be open. So that's
right.
Pretty damn awesome.
Pierogies and beef stroganoff at 3 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
What's more New York than that, than wandering out into the street? You know, and here's the thing, too, right? Like, people, I mean, it would be really disappointing to me when to think that somebody would think about not going to Hope because it's in New York City, because they're under some impression that they could not possibly handle it. Like, New York is actually really easy to handle. Like, it's an incredibly diverse place. It's got all sorts of interesting things happening. You can have an egg wrap in 10 seconds going into a store, pet the bodega cat, go outside, see somebody, you know, next to a speaker singing New York State of Mind by Jay-Z, followed by going down a street past, like, one of the most incredible museums in the world and have it be open for free on a Friday. Like, it's just such a cavalcade of just amazing things just all there. And for someone to think that it's like a war zone, or that it's too loud and scary, or that they will be unable to navigate it, that it'll be so hard. I'm like, please come to New York.
Yeah.
It is so, it's such a jewel.
It's,
you know,
it's one of the friendliest places on earth, too.
It really is.
Have so many really great encounters, whether it's on the subway, on a bus, in the street. Everyone has a different experience, but almost all of them are extremely positive.
Wear comfortable shoes, you know, good footwear, some running shoes are nice.
Yeah, every time I go into Manhattan, I'm walking all the time, and you never want to stop.
There's a book by Nathan Pyle that's called New York Etiquette, and it's basically this wonderful introduction to like the city. It'll just be like, you know, this is the shape of the Empire State Building versus the Chrysler Building, so you can navigate, you know, so you know this one's on the west, this one's on the east, so you know where to go.
Right.
And it's all sorts of things like, if you can get up at 6 in the morning, the city is yours. Like, you can jog and there's nobody on the street because the city doesn't wake up. And there's all sorts of that, but there's one in there that always makes me tear up. And it just goes, New Yorkers will help. And it's just got an older guy, like, on the ground, and people are all standing around going, are you fine? Do you need help? Are you doing something? And I'm like, yeah, that's the place. Like, people will help each other.
They will get involved
all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
you'll
the other
be
thing.
At, yeah.
The other thing to remember, it's open 24 hours. Unlike any other city that I know of, you can get on any subway line is open. You're never stranded. You're never not able to get somewhere via mass transit. And, you know, if you prefer cabs or Ubers, yeah, of course, they're everywhere as well.
But
it's, it's just an incredible place if you've never experienced it. And if you have, it's still incredible.
Yeah, just don't do the pedicabs. Because the pedicabs are amazing and wonderful, and they charge you by the minute.
Yeah.
So avoid those guys.
I don't think we've ever recommended that.
Yeah. And the first time somebody gets their little bill, and the guy's like, yeah, you owe me $108. And it's like, what? It's like, dude, the guy was standing outside of a Broadway show with a Christmas light lit up pedicab trying to convince you to drive with him. What do you think that? How is that story going to end? What do you think it was going to end with? $5? So anyway,
you can get ripped off for sure, but
You
know, there are so many things you can do for nothing, and it's just
nothing.
It's
you
amazing.
Can go to Soho and you can walk through all these beautiful luxury stores and see amazing things for sale, like sneaker stores where they have those upmarked collector sneakers and just sit. I went to a sneaker store once. And they have them up behind a little display, and they've got them like kind of behind a plexiglass for the thing. And there were these two kids near me, and there was one sneaker, and it said $1,000. And the kid saying to his buddy, like, "I'm going to touch it. I think I'm going to touch the sneaker." And they looked at me like I was a cop, and I was like, "Touch the sneaker." And the kid was like, "Touch the sneaker!" And like just a little bit of joy, no, just a shared moment, you know. Like there's 1,000 of those a day in that city. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. But of course, you'll be spending all your time at the conference because that'll be captivating that you won't want to leave. But
get a plane, get your delivery. This is an old hand talking. Get your travel for Monday, not Sunday night.
Yeah.
Because Sunday night is when all the friends you made, and they're all like, hey, let's go to whatever. And next thing you know, you're in a diner with all the people you made friends with at the event and having a good time. So leave Monday.
And if you give actually our early submission for talks and workshops is the end of April. We're still accepting after that, but this is for people who want an answer, yes or no, early. And we will do that shortly after the end of April. So if you have a talk idea or a panel idea, get it together now. You have a couple of weeks. All the details are on the Hope.net website. And, of course, you get free admission to the conference if you are accepted. When we talk about Hope, look what happens. A whole hour goes by.
That's right.
We haven't opened up the phone lines yet, so let's try and do that and get through some phone calls in fairly quick succession. So if you're planning a lecture, this might not be the best night for it. Let's try and make them as quick as possible so everybody gets a chance. The phone number, as soon as I say the last digit, will be open, 802-321-4225. And that means the phone lines are now open. We will take the first call as soon as it comes in.
There are no restrictions on what you say or what you talk about. You may cuss. We may cuss. We don't.
We will cuss.
You don't need to only do that. You can just share your thoughts. If there is a news story, something that got hacked, something that you're following, something interesting that we've said that conjures up an idea, please share that with us.
Well, something's happening now that we need to know about because, you know, we've been in the studio. I don't know what's going on in the world. We could be at another war now. We could have insulted some spacefaring race that's pissed off at us now. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't want to know what's going on.
I see one of the chatters is like giving all sorts of New York advice that I'm just like, you know what New York's good for? Advice. Lots of advice. He's anti-pet the bodega cat.
Pet the bodega cat. Oh, you have pet the bodega cat. If the bodega cat allows it.
Right.
Yeah, on their terms.
Yes.
With consent.
For what it's worth, the tips are all coming from Rebel, who is frequently the most confidently wrong person I've ever known.
Wonderful.
So all right. Take those with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
If you want to learn more about New York interactions, track down some columns called Metropolitan Diary that come from the New York Times, and they reprint them all over the place. But you see these little snippets of interactions. They've been printing this since the 1970s. They're all gems.
Absolutely. That's like the best question. And look out for them too when you're going about your life or if you're there for a visit or whatever, because it will happen. You'll realize, wow, these moments are occurring.
Yeah. Yes,
like I was in the subway and I was watching a rat, and there was a young woman watching a rat, and then it disappeared, and she like turned around, and it was like looking at me, and like we both realized we were witnessing this, like, you know, rat going about its life, and then we disappear, and like, you know, you never talk to
is this a real story? Are you?
Yeah, like there's so many weird little moments like that.
This happened to you?
Yeah, like like Jason was describing. I didn't tell you about it, but it was just while we were moving from one train to another. Those are all those kind of slices of life. But Metropolitan Diary, it just so wonderfully encapsulates it.
Yes, there are rats, but they're not everywhere.
We have a call.
Yeah, we have a call. Good evening. You're on overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question for Scott.
Rebel, his name is Jason. His last name is Scott. But let me just clear up a couple of things. We banned Rebel last time we talked on WBAI, and that was overturned on appeal because we looked at the logs, and it seemed like somebody called in and faked Rebel's voice. So nice try. Yeah, AI is doing some nasty things. So, Rebel, even though it wasn't you we found, you're still on notice.
Right. Okay. I just want to know, I use the Internet Archive a lot, and I like to, like, look at things like that happened before, like, let's say, before a building was built or what was here, because the city's landscape is changing so much. I just like to know what was here before and what website, like, what this website was in, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, and that's what I like to use the Internet Archive for. And also you were talking about different sites to communicate, like, people ask me, oh, do you have Instagram? No, I don't have Instagram. I have Facebook. I could check it. Oh, I don't have that Facebook. Do you have VK or whatever? I have VK, but, oh, I don't have that. Or I don't have TikTok. Or maybe this person does have TikTok and I don't have TikTok. You know?
Right.
It's no one, you know, it's like different company. You know, when you have the telephone, you could call anywhere, call anyone. You know, it's not like, you know, social media where you have to have this particular social media app or website or...
You've demonstrated that to us. I mean, we gave out the phone number, and there's no stopping you from calling us on that phone number because you have the phone number, and everybody can call us on that phone number. You know, there's no way to say, well, a Rebel, you have to use this particular service, and if you don't use this service, well, I'm sorry, we can't talk to you. There's no stopping you. You will call us on the phone number because the phone number works for everybody.
That's true, and that's what's good about the phone, and that's what's good about, you know, the old way of doing things, you know,
mm-hmm.
Call a telephone. Everybody knows telephones, you know, pick up a phone, dial it up 7 or send it your number, and you can communicate with basically anyone. You have a phone number? Yeah, or, oh, no, I don't have a phone. Go to my Instagram or go to WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, with WhatsApp, you have to have a phone number anyway.
All right. Well, thank you. We're gonna leave it there because we want to keep the phone lines open for as many people as possible since we blabbered on for so long over the last hour. But thank you, Rebel, for calling. Let's have a longer conversation next week, and let's open up that phone line, 802-321-4225.
Yeah. While we're waiting, I did have an interaction with somebody recently at my day job, and I won't go into specifics, but this person mm-hmm. is an older person who very vehemently does not use email or a cell phone, just their landline at home and written letters. And this person was describing this to me with such relish because they're someone who used to have to use computers for work and is long retired and old enough where they, quote, don't have to put up with that stuff anymore. And I was having a nice conversation with this person and realized on some level, like, I love technology. I love so many things we do with it, but I'm almost a little bit jealous.
Yeah, but the
people
thing
are,
is, go ahead, Jason.
People are entitled to live their lives however they want to when they are given the opportunity. And some people despise things that others love. So people who are like, it's tangential, but there's a friend of mine who, when he was 34, one of his friends has a, you know, he was visiting somebody and they were like, he's like, wow, you have a motorcycle. He's like, yeah, have you ever been on a motorcycle? He's like, no, I've never been on a motorcycle. He goes, oh, well, let me just show you how it works. Why don't you just drive down to the end of the street carefully and come back? And he said that he drove on the motorcycle, got to the end of the road, drove back, and he was crying because he had realized he had missed out 30 potential, whatever, 10 years of being able to drive a motorcycle. Like he regretted that, oh my God, I've never thought I would be a person for this. And so for him, it was like, I lost this opportunity. Whereas somebody who might say have driven every day for their job, nothing would be more pleasurable than never leaving the house and sitting on the backyard. Like that's, we get to live our lives what we want. The problem we run into is then saying, well, because I live this way, you all have to live this way too. Otherwise, there's something wrong with you. I totally agree that I have chosen a lifestyle where I am profoundly available and online. And I have paid some prices for that, and I've gotten some absolutely priceless treasures. And in the tech world, there is that danger that someone says, well, of course everybody wants an email address. Of course everybody wants a phone. And some people just, they don't. And it's like your job is not to evangelize them that right. They are wrong. Just do it. But if you need to reach me, I get it all the time. All the time. And I live that way. But I choose it. Anyway,
and
so
this
philosophy
is probably
chat.
Probably a great time to give out your email address.
Jason@textfiles.com, TextFiles.com. There's nothing you're going to send me that I haven't seen, and there's nothing you're going to make fun of me about that I don't already know is my problem. So go ahead and do it. But by the way, the weirdo who you guys got me hooked up with, it was a great summer. I had a good time. It was good. It was actually really it. I learned a lot. I actually did a podcast about him because it turned out his thing was to tell people that he had a story to tell. And then when you tried to help him tell the story, he would tell you how you were getting it wrong. And I was able to find three other people over the course of the previous 20 years who had been through this with him, to write newspaper articles, to do a documentary. And that was his deal, that like, no, the world isn't listening to me. Nobody cares about my story. And then when you helped him, he would go, you got my story wrong.
Right.
You're just part of the problem. And then he died. So it has a happy ending, and also, I think my most fascinating thing about him was that he was in Queens, and he had had some altercation with the city, and they had shut off his power and his water, so his house was nothing but flashlights, and he was using a bathroom with the gas station down the street, and I was like, you go, like, You sticking to your guns. I don't think you should, but you are. Mm-hmm. You're sticking to your guns, bro.
Living your best life, doing you. That's what it's all about.
That's all he wanted. All he wanted was life on his terms, and he got it all the way to the end of his life.
Okay. Could we ask for anything more? I don't think so.
I don't think so. He went into the ground exactly the way he wanted to, in obscurity with everybody else wrong. So, you know what? Go ahead, buddy.
And you got that relationship through us, you said?
Through you. He called you and, like, he called us and said, Jason is the one that could tell my story.
Except you couldn't, because you got it wrong.
Except they couldn't, because it's like the Kobayashi Maru. You can't actually tell his story. There is no real story to tell. It was fantastic. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about, like, there are limits. Not every story can be told. Sometimes people are assistants to their own oblivion. He had done some very amazing things earlier in his life, but he had driven away all of the people in his life pursuing his rule of, like, how it was going to be told. So he was estranged from the family. And like I said, I talked to this newspaper reporter, and I talked to a documentary filmmaker, and all of them were like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did he show you the bike? Okay, good. He showed you the bike? Cool, cool. He did the thing? Yeah, cool. All right. Does this every few years.
Wow.
And I guess, but you know what else he was besides that? A off-the-hook listener.
That's
so,
right.
You know.
Yep.
He had some redeeming qualities.
Well, I'm glad we were all able to sort of enhance his life a little bit, whether it's through radio or conversation. It's amazing.
We brought him his version of joy.
We have a very patient caller who has been sitting on hold for a while.
Bless them.
Or they might not be anymore. We'll find out. Good evening. You're on overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, Manuel. Thanks. It's Jim. I got to say, mentioning off the hook as a staying force in our lives, I could easily have been sitting on a call waiting to talk back in 1996 after failing to beat Rebel to be first to the phone. So, you know, it's amazing how much has not changed in my life and how much has changed. Really excited about the conference this year. I got to say, I haven't been to a host conference since 2005.
Oh, wow.
I had my first child the following year.
Uh-huh.
And so it was almost like there was always a birthday I was going to be a bad father if I missed. So I didn't. And now you moved it to a couple days after my anniversary, so I don't have any reason to miss it.
We checked. Really we checked to make sure it's convenient for everybody. So, you know, I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah. No, it's perfect. I'm looking forward to being in Manhattan. I'm the guy who called us in the Olympics a few years ago.
Oh, I remember. I remember that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I meant to call you from Italy, but the six-hour time difference is a lot harder than the 13-hour time difference, go figure.
Wow.
So it just didn't work out, but really looking forward to getting there and seeing you guys.
Make sure you introduce yourself so that we know who you are, because definitely have a lot of stories to share.
Yeah, I'll do it. We knew each other. I've been on the show before. I was Crowley's friend from Globix back in the day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so we'll catch up. Sounds good.
That was beyond hope. So, wow. And you haven't.
Yeah, it was beyond hope.
The last hope you were at was, if I'm correct, 2004?
Five.
It was the fifth hope. I thought it was 2005, but it might have been 2004.
Yeah, it was even years.
It was Waz there. So I got Waz's phone number, and that got me some cred with my kids later in life. I'm looking forward to getting back.
Wow. Okay. Looking forward to having you there, and we're all going to have a great time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. You take care.
You too.
802-321-4225. Have time for a couple more calls. That was a good call. Wow. I remember him calling in from the Olympics.
I do too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was working as a for a broadcaster of one sort or another, and all kinds of technical setups and things. Cool.
That was fun. While we're waiting for that call, Jason, I saw you posted about a month ago that it was the 15th anniversary of your employment at the archive.
Yes.
So belated congratulations to that. I like how you posted your offer letter from them, which noted that employment at the archive is not for a specific length of time at that will. I guess you could have taken that as a warning that we're going to keep hold of you for at least 15 years. You're going nowhere.
The one that I really liked about that whole thing was, like, I found out later that, like, when it was announced that, like, oh, Jason Scott's working for the archive, somebody wrote in and said, you should not be hiring him. He is a real danger, and he could be really detrimental to your organization. And the way I found out was, like, a year and a half after that, I was talking about something. I said, well, it's not like anybody really complained about me. And my manager was like, oh, no, people wrote in that said you should not be hired and you should be fired. And I said, really? Why didn't you tell me? They're like, why? It's bullshit. And so that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that impressed my coworkers was when somebody sent in a death threat. And they gave it to me, and I put it up on Blue Sky. And they were like, oh, my God. But it was such a great death threat, because in the death threat, they said, Mr. Scott should really learn to watch his mouth, because one of these days he's going to be walking along a street and bam, he's going to get hit by a truck and I'll be home watching TV with a perfect alibi. And I was like, this implies a truck assassin. Like, this implies there's a guy you can hire and he'll make sure that you have a rock solid alibi. And like, really? That's your guy? And I'm like, what kind of truck assassin is this? And we were looking up all those cars, like the ones they have in the car crushing events, like the, like the black with the skulls and the wings and everything. Like, great, I guess that's the truck.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you'd have to, you have to cross a street, obviously.
Yeah.
And he has to be on the street that you're crossing. It's a lot of coordination involved. It's not as easy as people think.
It's a nightmare. Yeah. If the whole point is you have to get flattened by a truck, it can't be most convenient methodology.
No, and he limited himself by saying it's got to be a truck. I mean, why not just a vehicle? Why does it have to be a truck?
Right. When he was a kid and he ran somebody over and got that taste for blood and said, I can make a career out of this, he also was committing to an oath.
Yeah.
And the oath was truck or nothing. And, you know, you can't just switch assassin methods midstream.
No.
Don't switch horses mid-assassination. No. That's all I'm saying.
Not if you want to keep your respect.
No, they won't take it seriously.
Right. We have a phone call. Yeah. Okay, good evening. You're on Off the Cover Time. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you fine.
Hear you great.
Okay, yeah. The gentleman that called, that just called a few minutes ago?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That show where he talked about being at the Olympics, that was literally the first time I'd heard your show, Off the Hook show. So I remember him because that was the first time I listened to the show, you know. And,
that's amazing.
I thought it was interesting when he said, yeah, I'm the guy that called from the Olympics, because I remember that call.
That was a while ago, too.
Yeah, that was a while ago. It was the very first time I ever listened to this show, Off the Hook.
That's incredible.
But I wanted to ask, I'm going to be coming in from Florida to Hope.
Okay.
Do you have any idea if that hotel offers any kind of discount for Hope
attendees? Yes, absolutely. Yeah, well, it's on the website. There should be a link that goes right to it.
Oh, okay.
And let us know if it's sold out, because I know that a lot were going.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if it is sold out, we can probably get more, but we have to know.
Okay, excellent. Yep. I will jump on that. All right, thanks. That answers my question. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll see you in August.
Yes, yep. Definitely.
All right, take care. Wow, it seems like everybody's coming, which is great.
You definitely can do, like, New York is a very, like, New York has a lot of variance in terms of hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, your best bet is to be in the Con Hotel. But if you can't be in the Con Hotel and you have to be somewhere else, people should be aware. I mean, if you're going in cold, it helps to book ahead of time. It does not, there's no sudden discount the week before a hotel room is available. And also bear in mind that it has one of the best public transportation systems in the world. So if you really, 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 really have to, you can get rooms elsewhere on the island or in a neighboring area, hop on and take like a 40-minute trip or less, depending, and be at the hotel where the con is. So don't let the prices guide you in terms of, like, don't go to, like, the crazy luxury hotel down there, look at $1,000 a night or something and be like,
oh,
they're all expensive.
Yeah.
There's lots of choices. I personally, whenever I shack people up at I always try to put them in Yotel just because I enjoy Yotel. Because
what is Yotel?
Yotel is this, like, it's this British chain. They have one in Times Square, and they try to sort of imitate a capsule hotel, but it's more or less just compact rooms, so they're cheaper. And they've got, like, it's just got a weird vibe. There's a robot that will store your suitcase for you. So you put your suitcase on a little thing. You'll see this big robot, like, grab the thing it's on and, like, move it up into, like, a... It's a weird place, but the prices are usually okay.
those aren't bad. I mean, that sounds a lot like CityBox. There's a lot of these, like, unattended hotels that we noticed when we were traveling. So, be creative, people. There's a lot of ways to work it and still have a really, really good time.
Our hotel had Nikola Tesla living in it. Beat that. You can't. You know, another thing, though, that I discovered was kind of cool is you can take a train to Penn Station, and if you do it right, you can walk down the tunnel and emerge out of a subway entrance right outside the door of the hotel without ever going outside. You can do that. If you want to do that.
That
takes practice.
Manuel?
Yes.
Really quick, I was just on the website. It does look like our block may be sold out for Friday
and
Saturday night already.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, we have to talk to them then and maybe get some more. Thank you for telling me that. No one else did. So we'll see if we can get more rooms added. Even without the discount, it's not a bad deal, but we can try and get more, and we'll update people. So look for announcements on that. Okay, we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello. Good evening. I'm from San Diego, and I wanted to give a dog to you a really good test dress, a really good item test dress.
Can you turn down whatever is on in the background, because we're having a little trouble hearing you?
Oh, yes. This is, I apologize.
Okay.
Oh, it's cutting out. I'm sorry.
Oh, we hear you. Okay, I don't know what all that was about, but it sounded like they had something to say, and, well, I think they were from San Diego. Did
clearly, get that? Clearly a truck assassin. Somebody on the chat is somebody on the chat is going, is this a two-hour special? Which, to me, is like asking a question like, is that a second slice of delicious pie?
I think perhaps over 50% of us don't have a two-hour special in us tonight.
Speaking of pie, speaking of pie, the TikTok Diner is attached to the hotel. You don't have to leave the hotel for that either. It's open 24 hours a day, and they have pie. Let me just tell you, they have amazing pie.
A full bar.
They have a full bar, too. Boy, that's going to
be
something.
And they have a burger that comes with, like, a big fried piece of cheese.
They invented disco fries.
They'll make it with a veggie burger.
They invented disco fries?
I don't know. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay. They have disco fries. I know that. And that's not all, too. There's an Italian place. There's a steak place. They're all, like, part of the hotel. But, you know, you can walk around outside. And even without crossing the street, you'll find a ton of things. It's just so amazing. I might ever want to leave. Shall we try one more phone call? All right, this will be the last phone call.
We can handle, yeah.
802-321-4225. We're sitting here waiting, but I sense we're getting tired because we've been on for a while.
You're all getting tired. I'm the one with the infinite energy. You know, I actually, for the people who, whatever, track all this stuff, I am officially on a GLP. So it's worked out for me. It's not for everybody, but we decided it was important. That was my remaining health thing, and I have lost 35 pounds in the last 2 months. And,
you look fantastic. I wasn't going to say that on the radio, but you do.
I was trying to, like, I'm now to the point where I'm like, look, the heart stuff's pretty good. What else is there? And I went to Korea and did medical tourism where they do, like, 70 tests in 3 hours to find anything wrong. And all of them were like, you should lose some weight.
Wow.
So I went and tried naturally. It wasn't working. And we went to my doctor and 35 pounds down and dropping because I am trying to I'm trying to live a good, not just a life, but live like a healthy, good life to work on things. So my energy is way higher than it is because I've essentially taken a bag full of basketballs and thrown it off me. So I'm feeling pretty good.
That's awesome.
It's not for everybody. It's not, you know, I would never be like, oh, and you all have to do this. It's like this. What's more important is that you look at your health and say, can I do things to improve my health that I can and within your context? And that's just as important as other knowledge.
I think we can all do that. And we can all basically be our own advocates. You know, if you're told to pursue a certain type of treatment, look into it, make sure it's right for you. You're not always told the right thing. And just know what's going on. Don't accept anything.
Yeah,
that's great to hear.
Take care of yourself, and you know, because regardless of what some people may think, there's always people who want you around a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely do it.
Kyle, we do not have a phone call, or we do?
The line is open.
It's open. Okay, so we need even one or two more minutes. 802-321-4225. Give a call to that number, country code 1, if you're calling from overseas. Write to us, oth@2600.com, if you...
does Jason have the number for the truck assassin? That would be 1-800-TRUCK-FUCK, which I believe is popular. Probably truckfuck.com. Probably don't go there. Maybe they're selling other things. And the other person was like, all I heard is Chinese peptides. My recommendation is not to go for the Chinese market for peptides. That's my personal recommendation. But we each have our limits, but my personal limit is... I want a chain of custody for stuff I inject. That's my line.
Mm-hmm.
That's my line. Everyone's got a line.
That's a good line.
Good line. I thought it was a pretty good line.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, I get it. Rock in a hard place, you know. But yeah, don't, you know. I've been fascinated learning about the whole peptide thing and about how different stuff is happening. It's a shame this country decided to lobotomize itself recently because... We're on the cusp of really, like, I think about the fact that, like, there are now drugs entering that my aunt who had diabetes could have had her life so utterly changed, right?
Yeah.
And that there's kids right now who are 5 or 6, and their parents are going to find out that they're diabetic, and there will be other, it might not guaranteed, but now there will be other choices on the menu to say, and if we do this, we can really help. And I think that's amazing. to, you know, we lost, this is going to sound like I'm making this up. We have lost so many Detroit house and techno DJs to diabetes. Like the guy who originally created All Your Bass or Belong to Us, that song.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other famous ones. They're in their 50s from diabetes, diabetic-related issues, because the health care is not it's A, not evenly distributed, but B, the therapies weren't there. And now they are. So I think of all the lives that will be saved going forward, and it's a changing world. Every few years, we get more and more options.
I feel like we're learning that science is good and not the enemy.
Yeah, I'm also thinking that's where we really are now with this. Like, people should know. It turns out science is actually can be your little buddy. Every once in a while, it comes up with a pretty dumb idea, and you got to tell it to, like, go back to the drawing board. But other times...
So if you hear somebody telling you science is the enemy, tell them where they can go. And
say no.
No.
Buddy. Buddy.
Buddy.
We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Bobcat. I have a question for Jason about the Hacker Halfway House.
Okay.
Does he recall this?
I do.
Okay. There was a thing, they had a web page, and it said something about you, and I don't know what their beef was with you, and I was hoping you could elucidate that.
Well, I know the Hacker Halfway House, and I know, you know, some of the plans of what they were working on, right? And I had been to it a few times. I don't recall a particular issue with anybody on the thing. But one of the problems that I encounter, and this sounds way worse than it should, is the famous Street Fighter scene where he goes, like, I'm sure this was the most important thing to you, but for me it was a Tuesday. There's like a real, and I mean, Eric, I know you get this, and I know others do. You know, it's like ambiently people derive mythology from interacting with a person who has a high profile. And to them, they're like, oh, this happened. They didn't get, you know, I wrote to them, and they never got back to me. And I'm like, oh, is that the week that I handled 400 emails, and I just didn't see yours because it went into spam, and I didn't check
exactly,
spam?
Yeah,
or,
yeah, that happens. And the thing is, you say high profile. The profile is so not that high. You know, it's just a slight, slight bit maybe higher than you think, is normal. But it's really not that high. I can only imagine people who are truly famous.
Right.
What they have. I mean, I've talked to some of them, and boy, they live a life of hell.
Yeah, and by that, you mean like any notoriety at all?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't walk down the street, or you just, you know, anything you say is given all this gravity, and any interaction is something like you say, it's a Tuesday for you, but all this mythology is attached to it. So.
One of my favorite, like, celebrity aspects is like a certain level of celebrity limo has a portable toilet in it, because you can be the kind of celebrity where leaving the venue and going to the airport to your plane, you can't stop anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, so they have to have a small portable toilet in the back seat of the limo, because they can't pull over because you will cause an event. Thankfully, I don't have that. I do get recognized in the street, but
really?
Luckily,
wow.
Not enough. But, yeah, just enough. Just enough. Enough that it's fine for me. But, man, I have nothing but sympathy for people who, not necessarily famous for a bad thing, but, like, people who maybe were really talented or achieved, maybe against their will, a certain level of notoriety, and now all of their life is... I gave this advice to Joe Grant, the hacker who does the badges and the crypto and everything.
Uh-huh.
He had just gotten a contract to be on Prototype This, which became like the television show of engineers. And I gave him multiple pieces of advice. But one of them was, you're not an engineer on this show. You're playing an engineer. So don't get twisted up about the fact that you're playing one.
Uh-huh.
So don't be surprised if they make you do shortcuts. And the other one was, take your wife, they had two kids at the time, take your wife to every place you ever talked about going on vacation, because it won't be the same for you anymore. Like, because if you go to, like, the Eiffel Tower or if you go to, you know, the Taj Mahal or something, people will now recognize you because you were on the TV and you won't be able to enjoy yourself. So get it now. Get it under now. Like, that's the kind of advice I give people.
Yeah, and if you're thinking of embarking on a life of fame, think twice because, based on, unless there's something really in it for you, it can be a life of hell as well.
So I will say, though, that the Hacker Halfway House was one of multiple hacking spaces in the New York City area that I've been to. And like all of them, they are composed of a bunch of people. And sometimes they will discuss, like, taking it to the next level. And sometimes they can't take it to the next level. And other times they do. That sometimes you'll have cases like Bree Pettis with, I forgot the name of the... which one was it that he was affiliated with?
Resistor?
Yeah, Resistor.
Oh, NYC Resistor, yeah.
Yeah, like, well, Bree went on to a level of notoriety and infamy and running a CEO thing, but he had been part of NYC Resistor, and I'm sure there was a lot of, drama and or resentment as one of its members kind of leaves the space having done work that has gone on to some level, and that's just the nature of when you have a bunch of humans thrown together who are only there for one specific theme, say exploration or technology. I have nothing, I'm not being coy here. I can't think of a hackerspace that I hate or one that I don't like because it's never the hackerspace. It's always maybe one or two people in it were a little extra or maybe somebody wanted to turn it into a business, but the place, however it existed, mm-hmm. 6 months or 60 years, it's a blessing when we have these spaces out there that are these, however long they last, they're little miracles because it's so hard to have a bunch of people together in a rented space survive. And I have been to you've been to a pile, I'm sure. I've been to like 20 or 30, and it's always... Some of them are very corporate. Some of them are like four people. Some mm-hmm. of them are like, they feel like a man cave. Other ones feel like you're in a school. The CT hackerspace feels like an almost like youth group / old person man cave feel. It's like pretty cool. They'll have classes for the kids, but they'll also have nights where they're like drinking and soldering. And it really feels very homey. Anyway, so I believe Hacker Halfway House was the one that was trying to, like, stitch together seven shipping containers to, like, weld them together to make a building in an open space, in a triangular space in Brooklyn, which is a very fun dream. I don't think it ever happened, but, like, if you've been to, like, a few places in Germany, I think of, and others where you're like, yeah, that could happen there.
Yeah.
You could come down one day, and there's nine shipping containers with ladders among them, and it's like a treehouse gone to whatever.
In Germany, they can just do that stuff. It just
works. Yeah, so I don't know. If they had a page about me, I don't remember it, but they wouldn't be the first, and they will not be the last.
I think we might have had the first hackerspace in New York City at Knotwork, which you probably never were at. And that was in the mid-90s. Has any one of you been to Knotwork?
I went there once.
You're not.
With a crowd.
Yeah,
and
I was there.
Okay.
Yeah. I was there many times.
Rob, you too?
Yeah, I just ended up there once with a bunch of the crowd, the usuals, and it seemed like a really cool place, but I didn't make it back before it stopped being.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was an entire floor of an office building on 29th Street in Midtown Manhattan, and I still can't believe we were able to pull that off. But, it lasted for a few years. Then we donated the space to the Indie Media Center in New York City, and they used it for a few years, and then it just turned into something else.
On archive.org, if you look for Two Hands Project,
okay,
there is, this is a weird thing, but like JetBlue, the airline, did this promotion in 2009 and then in 2010, where for $600 you could fly as many times as you wanted to in a month, okay? And it was just some weird promotion. I did it in 2010, but another group of guys who just assembled did it in 2009. And what they did was they bounced around North America and went to as many hacker spaces as possible and recorded a poorly filmed, bad sound interview with a lot of people you would probably recognize.
Wow.
You know, everybody from Bree Pettis to Adafruit to the Quartz Lab and Remake Lounge and Hack DC. Like, they went to all these places and they'd get one or two people and just interview them for an hour about their hackerspace. So that's from 2009, and it's a pretty amazing compilation. And then of course, like, they couldn't really kind of bring it to bear. And I said, look, just give me the footage. And I took the footage. I was going to possibly edit it, but it was, like, way too difficult because it was in such bad shape. But I then took it and took all the footage, you know, all whatever it was, 40 or 50 hours, and I put it up on archive.org. So it's just, you know, you would recognize quite a few people in there. I think, trying to think of some of the people, but, like, you know, like all the people you would expect. Mitch Altman is in there at one point. You know,
well, he's been to every hackerspace that's ever existed, so you would definitely see him at some point.
Yeah, Noise Bridge for the time that it was around, and so Hacker Dojo, like all these places that were very, you know, persistent for a small period of time, and they got them, and it was just like they didn't make the movie, but they did the ethnography, and that's just as important to me. It's like, here's what people were thinking hacking spaces were going to be in 2009. And it's nice. So it's on the archive. It's free. I think it's open licensed.
How do you find it?
Just go to archive.org and type Two Hands Project.
Okay.
And you will end up, you'll see immediately, like, you know, you'll see the collection of 45 tapes or 45 sets of tapes that they did. Again, don't expect a 4K red, you know, camera projection with moving camera. A lot of echo. These three guys, they did not know each other, right? So it's like your crew is literally three people thrown together on a road trip for 30 solid days, bouncing between hacker spaces.
Now I have to see it. I really do.
I mean, I think you'll see some voices in there. I mean, I don't know how many are still around or not around in terms of people, but you will definitely, I know that you will and Kyle will be like, oh, it's that one. Oh, it's that person. Oh, look at that. Oh, neat. You know, a lot of hair that isn't quite gray yet, a lot of shots of, like, monitors that are still pretty chunky. A lot lack of flat screen monitors.
I just pulled this up on the Internet Archive, and the Two Hands Project Footage Archive. I'm just looking at these thumbnails and recognizing like a dozen people already so far.
Yeah, it's just, wow. It's like a good example of just like this random bit of interesting, you know, just out there. I love these things being found, right? I'm just like a real fan of record people while you have them and just, you know, bring that out. And this just happened to stumble backwards into it. No movie came out, but something came out. Anyway.
Sorry, I'm engrossed in this.
That's a great little time capsule. And it's a really interesting period because a lot of the tapeless and a lot of digital photography was changing and emerging as, like, pretty affordable then. So people taking these little adventures and then you know, doing something or not with it is pretty incredible because we get to look back and marvel at it because we would have perhaps been in an audience for it were it to emerge as a completed sort of thing to consume. But
yeah, I think I'm looking at this thing. And I did run our automatic voice detection on it. So there are, in fact, ways to, like, you know, get captioning and all that. So you're able to look at, like, all the captioning. I sometimes pump captioning into an LLM and say, summarize what's being discussed and blah, blah, just to see what subjects are being covered and see what's there. And it's some pretty good stuff.
You know, someone could definitely make something of this. This does not look bad.
I think that if a person committed to it, they could do it. But I was like, this will be a lot of work, and it's not telling something super new. It's just providing evidence of something that was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just didn't want to, as me as a documentary guy, I didn't want the footage to disappear, but B, for me to sit down and do a story, I'm going to be like, if I don't do this, if I don't edit this together, this tale will not be told.
Yeah.
This is not that. This is a reference document.
That's a trap, though, to tell yourself that. What you did is the right thing, where you let the material be available, and if somebody wants to pour themselves into it, they have that ability.
Yeah, if somebody wants to do a MakerBot documentary, well, here's some footage of Bree Pettis before MakerBots were even a gleam in his eye, and what was he talking like back then, and what was he covering, and what was important to him. Or, you know, I know that the head of the Connecticut hackerspace died of COVID. There's footage of him in here that we would, you know, you wouldn't have.
Uh-huh.
So things like that, you know, you definitely benefit. And some of these, you know, like Noisebridge was like, you know, they went through a whole bunch of iterations and work and had a whole bunch of figures involved and gone, right? Like just gone as a entity. And so here's recordings of them during that period of time.
The logging capability is really, really, really cool. When I was in school and starting out, interning and stuff, like that's something that you would do is log tapes and help find bytes, like sound bytes and things to use. And that's a big part of the attitude I think we have with a lot of the photography and things we've captured over the years. Even if we don't know what the story is or what to do with it, and we've amassed a fair amount of stuff like that. But the other thing is just material in general from the past 40 years. And some of the stuff that you, Emmanuel, have done privately has bits and pieces of things that would work for different stories. But there's, alas, so many different stories. Mm. It would all be wonderful source material, and it's just great to have access to it, even if it hasn't been presented yet. But I think we're still figuring out what those which stories haven't been heard and which stories are relevant, because a lot of this stuff is still ongoing, like it's still emerging.
Yes, absolutely.
There's a documentary on New York public access television that was playing Sundance, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
So, like, that's piled up with, like, all of the crazy public access shows of New York City.
Oh, wow.
You see all these unusual shows, and the footage is in such rough shape, and you're just like, yep, even though it's in rough shape, there's a story here, you know. It's some of the worst quality footage you'll ever see, and you're just like...
which somehow adds to the magic. By the way, Jason, you've sort of moved away from your microphone. We can... Hear you like you're on the other side of the room.
I have a microphone that is not, it could stand, like this microphone's just on the edge of falling apart, and when it works so well. So really, it's like one of those older workers. Oh man, when he's lifting, he's great, but he'd rather be outside getting a smoke.
Uh-huh.
All right, also, workers, we're going to have to wrap this up.
I figured somebody was going to say that soon. Jason, I want to thank you so much for spending so much time with us. Fascinating as always, fun as always.
I'm very much happy that you guys are continuing all the work that you're doing, and I am very pleased that you don't take things like being unfairly kicked out of a venue lying down. That's pretty amazing. And I'm also very happy to see you all persisting, just making the world better and doing the things. I acknowledge that all the time, because I've just seen so many people where you see them one week and they're gone the next. And it's just like, you just got to acknowledge, like, man died doing what he loved, being on public radio.
Yeah. I'll have you a good show. Thank you, Jason, and we'll talk to you again real soon, and definitely we'll see you at Hope.
Yep, see you later.
All right, good night.
Hey.
And everybody else out there, we are done for the night. Boy, this was a long overtime. Holy crap, an hour and 45 minutes. So we're sorry to everybody who stuck around, and we're grateful that you did stick around. But
you see, your position is way different than mine, because for all those people, I say you're welcome.
Yes, yes. Any final words, guys?
Time for bed.
It's 9:45 at night, Alex. What do you mean it's time for bed?
You've done big days, long days.
We're all going to be cranky in the morning.
Keep being the best. Just keep being the best hacker radio show in New York City, folks.
Well, that's a fairly low bar, but thank you.
Do your best. Yeah, do your best.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, write to us, OTH at 2600.com.
And thanks for hacking and hyping. And Jason, thanks for hyping.
What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, I said it, but
that's a YouTube thing. You can
hype. I didn't mean it like that, but you can take it that way.
I'm told you can hype like channels, or you can hype programs on YouTube, and it somehow helps them. How is it going to help us?
Spread the word, hype hope. Just keep misbehaving out there.
We don't monetize. We don't do any of that crap.
Okay. And thanks for.